This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad to be with you today. Talk a lot of sports with you. We'll talk later on with Joe Rexroad of the Lansing State-Journal. Currently, we hope to make contact shortly with Vince Ellis of the Detroit Free Press. Talk a little basketball, talk a little football, a little both on today's edition of Sports Talk 870. So just give us a call. Once again, the numbers to call, 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, the Detroit Lions didn't get the Cliff Avril's name under a contract yesterday by the 4 p.m. deadline, so he will be franchised at $10.6 million. He'll get that for his 1 year to play with the Detroit Lions. So Cliff Avril, after 3 years, not able to get the long-term agreement, but we'll see what happens if they can work something out in the future. And hopefully that will happen with Cliff. You know, he's a big important part of this team and of that Lions defense. So we'll have to wait and hear and see what happens with Cliff Avril. Now, next year, it's really going to be a problem for the Lions. They have so many players that are going to be under franchise next year that will be up for free agency. You have about 7 or 8 players next year. That's going to be a big problem for the Lions. So we'll have to look at, in all honesty, we'll be looking at a lot of guys next year. And I was just trying to find the list of all the guys that we'll see in next year's a free agency or have a chance to be free agents. And that's Corey Williams, Justin Durant, DeAndre Levy, Chris Houston, Louis Delmas, and Goster Cherlis. Those are the players that will be free agents next year. So Detroit will have some tough decisions to make as they try to keep this team together, especially many of the defensive players that are very good, that are outstanding. So that's one thing that they will do, is try to keep that core of defensive players together. And, of course, the offensive players together. They're going to have to probably give the quarterback, Matthew Stafford, a big up. He's one guy, you know, they're going to pay him. They may not want to pay him as much as they may have to, but he's in a very strong position. He's played very well for them when he's able to stay. He stayed on the field all last year. If he has another year where he stays on the field for every game, he just makes his position even stronger. So we'll just have to keep a look at that and see if Matthew Stafford can stay healthy and play a lot longer for the Detroit Lions. So we see that, and it's a lot of other players. You know, we saw Matt Forte got signed, Ray Rice got signed, a few other players got signed, so they made it. And we'll talk about those guys as well later on in the show, right here on AM 870 WKAR. And Damian Woody already said if he was Cliff Avril, he wouldn't report to camp. That's what Damian Woody said. He said he's been through that before, done that, and been a holdout and such, and says he just not would report to camp unless he has a signed contract. So since Cliff Avril hasn't signed one, it'll be interesting to see, does he follow somebody's advice like Woody? Damian Woody's advice, or will he just go ahead and be a free agent? It'll be interesting to see. Everybody handles it differently. They can all handle it at the same way. Maybe he should have taken the money. He was offered a 3-year contract for around $20 million. He would have got a $10 to $15 million signing bonus in that first year. So who knows if he should have taken that $30 million offer for 3 years. And, and then would have could have negotiated the last couple of years. Well, right now, let's go talk a little basketball. Talk about how the Detroit Pistons are doing with our good friend from the Detroit Free Press, Vince Ellis. Vince, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, Earl, how you doing?
Hey, doing okay. Good to hear from you. And yeah, talk about those Pistons. I mean, they've had a pretty good free agency. How do you see these guys fitting in next year? Do you see any of them making a significant impact?
Are you referring to free agents or the rookies, you mean?
Yeah, free agents or the rookies.
Obviously, I think Cormac Getty will play, being a rotation, the guy they've traded Ben Gordon for, more of a financial move than necessarily a move for the future. He'll be part of the rotation. Slava Krastov, and I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that guy's name correctly, probably a shrewd move by the Pistons. Didn't have a whole lot of money to spend, so they went overseas and plucked a guy from Ukraine, a place where it's not exactly on the beaten path from a lot of NBA scouts. Pretty tough place to get to, as a matter of fact, the Ukraine. And hopefully, he can provide kind of what Omer Asik is going to provide next year for $25 million. And they can get him for $1.5 million. And other rookies, Kim Inglis looks like he's ready to probably help now. Has good defensive feet. Because he really shoot the ball well, and it looked like there'll be opportunity for minutes there, considering the trade of Ben Gordon. Drummond, the first round pick, on the other hand, while he looked about like I thought he would look in summer league, he had flashes of really good stuff, but there were times he looked kind of lost. So I would not be surprised if he didn't even play that much next year. The Pistons knew that he's a project, and that they're hoping to draft a guy now and hope in a couple of years they'll have unleash a monster on the NBA. So that's the hope there anyway. So, of the rookies, obviously, we got Kyle Singler. That's a guy they have a lot of I think he had a lot of promise. They're probably even thinking right now up in the front office, can Kyle Singler start now? And if they come to that conclusion, I wouldn't be surprised to see Tayshaun Prince's name start getting floated in trade rumors between now and the start of training camp, if they think Kyle Singler can start now.
Yeah, if they do think that, and some of those other guys can contribute to the guys you've talked about, would this be a team that you say could make the playoffs, or are they still a little bit away from being a playoff team?
I'd like to see how the offseason shakes down before I would be willing to say they'll be a playoff team. I can see them challenging for a playoff spot. I think they'll be better than they were last year, which is progress. But, it's the East, so challenging for the eighth spot might not even be that big a deal anyway. But, let me see how their offseason shakes down before I'll be willing to say whether they're a playoff team or not.
Yeah. And what about when you look at all these guys together and we talk about whether they can make the team, how many do you think can make the team of their rookies and their free agents? How many of them do you think can really make the team? Or as we know, they may have 11 or 12 in contracts. Some of them may end up in the D League. Some of them may get traded. What's your thoughts on how many of these guys can actually make the roster?
Well, everybody that you see, they plan on being on the roster next year. The only person who doesn't have a guaranteed deal for next year right now is Chris Middleton. They're negotiating one with him right now. And just to clear up something about the D-League stuff, they can have a player in the D-League, but that guy still counts against their roster. Brennan Macklin was in the D-League last year, but he still counted in among the 15 allotted guys you get. So it's not like you can just stash a guy down there. And, that guy down in the D-League playing for you, if he has a contract with you, he counts on your roster. And if he's not on the contract with you, he's a free agent. So I know the misconception that a lot of people have, like, oh, he can just go to D-League and he doesn't count against the roster. But, yeah, he does count against the roster. But everybody, they have 15 guys now. The only person they have not signed is Chris Middleton. So everybody's making the team, and that's what you're asking.
Yeah, one way or the other, so they'll all be on the team.
They all got guaranteed contracts, so they'll all be on the team. The only guy who does not have one right now is Chris Middleton. So they have 14 guys on the contract. And all indications were, I asked at the opening press conference, whether they're chanting the second-round guys could wind up overseas. They can't set a guy over there and retain his draft rights if the guy go overseas and stuff, but they said they plan on Middleton and English being on the team next year. So someone would have to be moved. to trade it. Trade possibilities, definitely, but making the team, everybody's on the team as of now.
Okay. Now, what about the big guy, the first-round pick, as you say? He looks like he's going to be a project. It seems like today, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but it seems like a lot of the young guys who come in the league today after with just 1 year of college or such, they're really projects. They have a lot to learn. Do you think that's good for them, or should they – do you think, just as your own opinion, that they should stay and get more seasoning at the college level?
I don't believe in that because all you can do is – go down. Like, let's look at Derek Sullivan. All right? Would have been better going pro after his first year?
Yeah, boy, that's a hard one to say. He would probably have been drafted higher.
Yeah. He's still at 22. It would have been better. He'd been better leaving after 1 year. I don't buy that whole, either you can play or you can't play. And I figure if you're going to be playing your wares, playing basketball, you're not going to be paid doing it. Like, I've made this Marcus Taylor comparison before. People say the reason Marcus Taylor didn't make it was because he left school too early. The reason Marcus Taylor didn't make it is because he couldn't play. Period.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's for sure. And a lot of these guys, but a lot of these guys really think they're ready when they're not ready. But is that still good for them to go in and, I guess, get that experience, even though they may not get that experience at the pro level and get a chance to play a lot, but at least they're getting on a roster and they're getting paid for it.
Yeah, they get paid for it. And what would you rather have? Instruction for a college guy who might be trying to hold your game down because he wants you to stay in school, or a pro franchise that's trying to maximize your potential? Obviously, everybody's situation is differently, but I would say more times than not, if a kid has the aptitude to play NBA basketball, he needs to leave as soon as possible. If not necessary, you stay in college, get hurt, and then where are you?
Yeah, I know a lot of the guys, they feel that, they're just, they're all their weaknesses get exposed the longer they stay in school, and that's the one thing that does hurt them. The longer they stay in.
Look at Dan Sullinger. Even though, obviously, one of the reasons why he fell is because of the back thing that came up. Mm-hmm. But, that's just, maybe that back thing doesn't appear when he leaves after his freshman year at Ohio State. And you know what? He's a top five, top 10 pick. You know what? He makes more money for it. So I just think that you're playing with too many variables. If there's a chance you can go in the first round to go back to school, I really do.
Mm-hmm. Hey, why do you think that the Pistons' first round pick dropped to number 9? I mean, he was talked about being a top 5 pick, and the Pistons were able to get him at number 9. What happened? Why did he drop so fast?
Well, I wrote a big profile in the Free Press this past Sunday. You didn't even read it, Earl?
Didn't get the paper. Didn't get the paper, my friend.
It's online.
I have to go back and look at it online. That's for sure.
Well, the reason why, I'm just messing with you, Earl, but the reason why is that, he got outplayed in pre-draft workouts. Guys with second-round grades were outplaying him. So, a lot of these second-rounders, though, are guys that are 22, 23 years old.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to outplay a kid who's 18. But the thing is, he's 18. So what they're projecting is
he'll
be at 21. Yeah. He'll be a lot different than when he's 18. That's the projection because he has other measurables when it comes to athleticism, speed, strength. I mean, he's if you look at an NBA center, it looks like this kid was from Central
Casting. Yeah, I mean, he's got huge hands, too. That's one thing I know. He really has big hands that I don't know if that hurts him with shooting free throws or not, but he's got some huge hands. Hopefully it helps him as far as being rebounding and do with all the other things. But, boy, you have to marvel at a guy who has such big hands.
Well, he'll be better than Kwame Brown. I can say that right now because he can catch.
Yeah.
And another thing about him as well is that he seemed to be very comfortable on the perimeter. Sometimes big guys are not comfortable away from the basket and stuff, like especially defensively. He seemed to move well on the break. He was able to catch the ball and come up with some pretty creative ways to finish around the basket. I actually showed his touch around the basket a lot better than I thought it'd be. But again, there'd be times, where teams would be playing volleyball on the offensive glass, and there's often days fighting there, and you don't even see Andre. So, that's the kind of stuff you got to work on.
Yeah, that's one thing. It's like we see more and more now that big guys are more comfortable playing on the outside. We don't have any more these days. We don't see the old you know, low post guys just staying and playing on the low blocks. Everybody just goes outside and plays outside. Do you think that's good for the game, that you have all these big guys playing on the outside and shooting three-pointers now?
I don't necessarily know if it's good for the game. It's just the game's evolved. I guess you just got to evolve with it. So I wouldn't say it's a good or a bad thing. I just say we've had a paradigm shift, and big guys, things are different now. So
yeah, they are. They certainly are different. The game has changed a lot. The college game has changed a lot, and the pro game has changed a lot. I know you watch a lot of college ball, too, and you can see all these differences in the college game and the pro game, and it's just a little bit surprising how much this game has changed over the years and how big guys now are basically three-point shooters. I remember a long time ago, if a guy was straight outside the paint, they'd get harassed significantly, but that doesn't happen anymore.
You are correct.
Yeah, so now it's all guys, all inside, all playing inside guys playing out, and I guess that is an advantage because a lot of the people that have to cover them have to come outside to cover them, and sometimes they can't do that. So in that aspect, it does make a different game, and makes bringing their big guys, your big guys out on the perimeter. If you can shoot it, that's definitely a plus for you. So I guess we'll be seeing that in a lot of that in the very near future.
Well, the advent of the stretch four, 6'10", 6'11", guys who can shoot threes, the devastating weapon, because most, like you said, most bigs aren't comfortable out there trying to guard those guys. So it's kind of a devastating weapon. I mean, the Spurs almost made it to the Eastern Conference, made it to the NBA Finals. The Boris Shaw is starting power forward. So, and he's telling nobody would call an inside monster at all, so.
Oh, that's true. It's a devastating part of the game. Hey, Vince, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend, and talking NBA. And, we'll be talking more NBA down the stretch, especially when the Pistons get to training camp. Because there should be where do you see the biggest battles for making this squad or sticking with the squad? Because, you can only take the 12 that means a couple of guys will probably end up in the D League there for sure. So what do you see the biggest battles at in training camp?
The only guy that could see potentially being in the D League would be Chris Middleton. I think everybody else will be around. I mean, you can activate 12 guys on a given night. It's just those guys that are on your roster that are activated on the bench of street closing. Let me double check that. I think they changed the rule to where they can activate 13 guys. It's either 12 or 13 guys that you can have on an active on a given night. But those guys that are not active are just sitting around in street clothes. You can probably see – I would be surprised if maybe see Drummond might get a D-League extension if it looks like he's not getting any minutes up here. But for roster battles, you look at, the guys up front that will get playing time right now, the Ukrainian, Jonas Repko, Greg Monroe. And so I guess the competition for those third and fourth, and Jacob Maxfield. So you're looking at, the competition for who's going to be in the playing rotation. I guess it'd be among Drummond and Krastov, the Ukrainian guy. So those, that looks like that'd be the competition there, as far as like who's gonna get those minutes and stuff. So, and there is the possibility that Ben Wallace could return, but obviously they'd have to like either trade someone from the current group of players, or the team has to decide whether they even want him back or not, because the team is trying to get younger,
right?
And suddenly, if he's on the roster, frankly, use him. Mm-hmm. And, obviously the organization might not be in a position where they want Ben Wallace and Jason Maxfield out there crunch time when they have, all these young players sitting on the bench that really want to play. So that's kind of stuff that the team has to kind of decide before the season starts.
Yeah, those would be some tough decisions, that's for sure. Hey, Vince.
I got a question for you, Earl.
Uh-huh.
All right. As you know, I'm an Alabama guy.
Yep. You're going to the Alabama-Michigan game.
Are Spartan fans like, hoping that Alabama undresses Michigan like they did you guys a couple of years ago?
I think they probably are, for the most part. You know, if Alabama beats Michigan, Michigan State fans won't lose any sleep over it.
And y'all want a beat down too. Like, y'all would be irritated if it's close, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, because if it's a close game, that means it might mean Michigan is probably back if it's a really close game. But if they just beat them down, they might feel a little bit more comfortable in those surroundings.
Okay. I just want to get the pulse of the people up there.
Uh-huh. Okay, my friend. Well, we'll talk more when that game gets a little bit closer, that's for sure.
All right, Earl.
Okay. Hey, Vince, we'll talk to you a little later, my friend.
Take care, Earl.
Okay. Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Vince Ellis from the Detroit Free Press talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. 26 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Budget shortfalls are nothing new in the still struggling economy as states try to fund services without economic growth. That means cutting programs and trimming services, which in turn puts recovery further off. I'm Jennifer Ludden. State budgets still feeling the recession. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. This is Scott Pohl with the weather. There's a heat advisory until 8 p.m. Mostly sunny, the high 100, the heat index up to 105. Partly cloudy tonight, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 70. Partly sunny and maybe rain and thunderstorms tomorrow, the high 85.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, Aaron, I know you haven't been around a lot lately, but it's nice to have you back. And, you know, with all the signings, were you surprised by any of the signings in the free agency of the National Football League?
No, not really. I mean, at this point, you know, I suppose if this is like the first year I've ever watched football, maybe. But, you know, in the sports world, I think I've seen everything. So probably not everything because frankly, I'm still young yet, and the league is still growing. So, no, I'm not surprised by anything. I mean, was there anything that stuck out to you specifically?
I don't think so. I mean, I was a little bit surprised that Ray Rice and Matt Forte got their deals done because the way running backs they they're not used like they used to be used. You just don't have that one running back getting most of the carries now. Everybody's sharing it two or three times. So I was a little bit surprised that they got their big deals, but I was glad for them because they certainly deserved it.
Yeah, they're both quality running backs. I mean, I think that's probably why they did is because I don't think there's a lot of running backs out in the market right now. So I mean, if they would have got rid of them, or you know, some other way, or traded them for something else, frankly, you probably had a. I mean, you still need a running back. Let's face it. I mean, like, but you make a good point. They're not utilized as what they used to be. Yeah. But I mean, you can't throw it 50 times a game and expect to win every game. I mean, you have to. You know, you have to do a little 50-50 or 60-40, whatever the case is. But you still need a running back.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. And these slot receivers now seem not be getting a fair shake. I mean, Wes Welker certainly deserves a new contract. He signed his tender, and he's going to get paid $9.5 million. He tried to get a long-term contract, and they weren't budging New England on getting a long-term deal. So that's going to be a little bit of a problem for him. I don't know if he'll get a long-term deal at his age because he's around 31 years old. It's going to be hard for him to get a long-term deal.
Yeah, which if you think about it, realistically, 31, you're like, oh man, he's still young. But you know, that's how the football works. But you know, I'm not. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not going to cry the fact that he's getting $9.9 million. But yeah, you're right. I'm sure he was looking to get that long term deal.
Because
I'm sure he wants to stick with New England his whole career, you know, the rest of his career anyway. So, you know, that's probably, especially when you have Tom Brady as a quarterback, why else would you want to go anywhere else?
And,
so.
And he throws to him a lot. I mean, he's a very coveted receiver, at least for Tom Brady. If he goes somewhere else, he may not be looked on as much like Brady looks on him. So that's always a gamble you take in football. One guy, you might play really good in one team, then you go somewhere else, and you might be the invisible man.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, he knows that, and he doesn't want to leave. So, but, you know, if New England – I think New England knows that too. So, you know, I'm sure they had their reasons, you know, salary reasons that they didn't sign him to a long-term contract. I think he's been in some injury troubles a little bit here and there. So maybe that was something that had to do with it. But nonetheless, he's still on the team, and so I guess that's what counts.
Yes, for sure. He's going to get another shot. He's going to have another chance to get them back to the Super Bowl. And see, he blew that pass, and which everybody blames him for losing the Super Bowl last year. I never put the loss on one guy, even if he makes a bad play. Like he just didn't make the catch. That's all I would say. He just didn't make the catch. A lot of guys don't make catches at a key time or when you really think they should need it. Need to make a catch. I wouldn't say you just blame that on him just because he didn't make the catch. Everybody drops the ball. Unfortunately, there's no way of telling when they're going to drop it or what time they're going to drop a ball.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, unless you're a kicker, you might be able to come up with the reason why a kicker missed a kick. But, nonetheless, there's usually always a case in the game somewhere where I said, well, if that player would have done that instead of missing that, then we wouldn't even be in this situation. So, yeah, you're right. Anytime someone blames someone, they're just trying to come up with a reason to blame that guy for whatever reason. Maybe they don't like that player. But, yeah, it's a team sport for a reason.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, that's the thing. You win as a team, you lose as a team. I know when I was talking with Seth Mitchell, even though when he became a boxer, and, we talked boxing, when we were talking football, that's the thing I said. Hey, you know, say when you're on a football team, you know, even if you have a great game, an outstanding game, but you lose, you know, you got to feel sad, even though you had a really this great game. And then you got to feel sad, even though you played very well. And maybe the coaches will tell you that you played well. But, of course, you're not going to be happy because your team lost the game. But in boxing, it's all on you. You win and you lose. You can't look at anybody else. You can't blame your teammates. They didn't make plays or whatever. It's just all on you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the beauty of that sport. It's, you know, if you screw up, well, that's your fault. You know, you did everything right. I'm sure your trainer did everything right. And if you screw up in the ring, well, no one to blame but yourself.
That's it. That's the way that game plays. That's the way the ball bounces in that arena. That's for sure. It's going to be interesting seeing this year once everybody records to camp and see what the teams look like. I mean, we've still got 12. I'm really curious to see how good Penn State will be under their new coach. They're going to have a new coach this year. It'll be interesting to see how good they become. And it'll be good to see how Nebraska is after their first year in the league. Now this is going to be second year. They have a little a chance that they'll have a chance, a little bit more of a chance, either to get beat up or something in the league. But Nebraska, we're taking a good close look at them. Their quarterback is coming back. Many of their offensive players are coming back. They should be, like now we're saying, there should be a strong team this year. But who knows? You know, they've got a lot of people that are still trying to learn their way around the Big Ten.
Yeah, well, to address Nebraska first, you're right. I expect them. You know, they were competitive in numerous games last year. Obviously they had a couple wins over some of the division, you know, weaker ones, and then I know they had some great games against some of the other top tier teams in the leagues. But I'd have to go back and look at them. But no, they have a great quarterback, mobile quarterback, and you know, their defense is kind of what they're known for. I know I don't think it was up to par as to what it should have been last year, I think, you know, coming into this season. But, I expect them to be competitive this year. I think they're a tough team to read. I think that's what some of the other teams around the league obviously are trying to figure out is what kind of style they play. I think they're still trying to figure that out, you know, looking at film from previous years and stuff. So, I expect them to be competitive. But regarding Penn State, well, that's assuming they even have a season. Frankly, I don't think they should, but
we don't know yet at this point in time. They might not. So that's still up for debate.
Yeah, that's still up for debate. I know I don't know if it was the AD or some president or something, just did a recent interview, and he's basically said that he's not leaving the so-called death penalty off the table. But, it's a situation that's never been like this. Anything like this has ever happened before. Unfortunately, it's one of those deals where people in the past made a mistake, and it's kind of hard to, punish the current people that had nothing to do with the situation. But you know what? It was an organization decision that, unfortunately, that's how the world works, And so if it comes down where they have a season off, I won't feel one bit sorry. I would feel sorry for the players that have worked their butt off to try to go to Penn State. That's been their goal. I don't know how they would work that out, but, especially some of those top players. I mean, sure, they can transfer, but where are they going to go?
Yeah, if you transfer at such a late time, they need to make the decision real quick. So if players want to leave, they can leave and be eligible to play somewhere else. If you leave to go to a school and they've already started training camp and everything, you'd be on the team, but it'd be awful hard to fit in and learn everything that you need to learn, in 2 or 3 weeks. You really need to be there before school starts so you can get the playbook and read up on everything. So hopefully if they do decide to shut them down, it'll be done real soon.
Yeah, I mean, that's the players spent so much time visiting these schools and, talking to the coaches, visiting the parents and all that good stuff. So, yeah, hopefully they decide it soon. But, I'll say this. I think if the NCAA wants to make a example of something that, frankly, is probably the worst thing we'll probably see in my lifetime as far as sports is concerned, they should make an example and, actually step up and do something for once regarding things like this. Like I said, I know it's unfortunate that the people that aren't involved would have to, be sort of punished per se, but matter of the fact is that there were so many lives that pretty much got destroyed and hurt that, I think it's a small price to pay for what happened.
Oh, for sure. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR, 355-9527, or toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way each and every day. That's Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Where do you go for great conversation on the topics that matter the most? The radio is more responsive than the water cooler, and we take your calls. I'm Jennifer Ludden. If you're talking about it, we're probably talking about it too. Join us for provocative talk on the issues you care about. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
A heat advisory is in effect until 8 p.m. for a high of 100 degrees with a heat index up to 105, mostly sunny today. Tonight, partly cloudy and a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms with a low of 70. Partly sunny Wednesday, maybe rain and thunderstorms, Wednesday's high 85. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We're going to be contacting Joe Rexroad and talk with him soon. He wrote a big column today on the Penn State situation, and we'll talk with Joe about that and with other things going on in the sports world. Right now, let's go to the phones. We've got Todd on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Earl. How you doing today?
Okay.
Pretty warm out there today.
Yes, it is. 95 right now.
The air conditioner working in the outbuilding today, I hope?
Yeah, it is.
That's good. I want to ask you now, I would be glad to see if you would carry this over to Joe Rexroad and what his opinion would be, saying he'd come on soon. Let me give you a scenario. Let's say something in the athletic department happened at Michigan State, and it was a very serious criminal-type situation involved not only the sports programs there, but probably your degree to the university and trying to cover it up. You would talk about it, you would acknowledge it, and you would have an opinion on it. When you were out with Michigan State would allow you to do so, don't you think?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So why, when I turn on the Big Ten Network, do I get replays of Illinois versus Indiana circa 1987? Why do I not get Jerry DiNardo, Dave Redson, Dave Hall, and we can go down, they're all nice guys, they all know their football. Why does the so-called network that covers Big Ten sports, that promotes it, glorifies it, and makes money off of it, seems to have absolutely nothing to say about what's going on at Penn State? Why do they tell me what a big deal it was for Joe Paterno to win his 400th game, which at the time it was, and yet now, when Penn State needs criticism, needs people to come out and give opinions and say what happened there and go out and put their voices on the line and maybe an offended advertisers or a school official or something, is the Big Ten Network, with the school that is a member of the Big Ten, doing and saying nothing? How am I to take this network with any degree of credibility when, in my mind, they're showing nothing but pure cowardice when their refusal to deal with this issue, Earl?
Well, there's, as you know, there's so many people out there already commenting on it, and a lot of people have given their 10 cents.
This is their area of expertise. They cover these schools. They have people at these schools. They know the coaches. They know the players. They know all these things. They have connections, and because it might offend somebody or it's hot or Penn State might get mad that they're going to take Big E, this is the Big Ten Network. Penn State is a member of the Big Ten. If they're going to take in those cash dollars from this network, if their games are going to be shown on TV by this network, when they mess up, this network needs to step up and lead the charge and say this is wrong, it was wrong, they knew about it, and give an opinion about it.
Well, I mean, that's your opinion. Obviously, the people with the Big Ten Network would disagree with you, but that's just the way they feel about it. And of course, they've given opinions before, maybe not as vociferous as you would like, but they have given opinions, and that's the thing. They haven't given them strongly like you would say, but they have given their opinions, and some of the people there talk about it, but some don't. And that's just your opinion on how loud or how vociferous they get, because they're hearing the comments all over the nation. Okay, and that's one. We always hear that. That's for sure. The time was 43 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Let's go back to the phones. And Dennis, how you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Earl?
Okay.
I didn't hear your response to Todd, but just tell Todd to cool his jets.
Yeah.
Sunday night, the Big Ten did a pretty comprehensive live show. Mm-hmm. I would add, with Coach Mason. He's coach at Minnesota.
Minnesota, yeah.
Some other guests and the panel that Todd just suggested ought to do something about it. So they did do that. They're mm-hmm. a little bit ahead of you, Todd. Earl, I was going to wait on Rex Road, but I guess I can convey my comments through you. Last night, Travis Smiley on his PBS show had Mark Emmert on there.
Yeah, I heard that. I didn't see it, but I heard about it.
Well, Emmert but implied mm-hmm. that they are not going to leave this completely up to the criminal justice system, that the NCAA is going to take a close look at this, and they may act as an institution in addition to what law enforcement has already done or is doing. He made the point that one of the key responsibilities of an academic and an athletic institution is to teach integrity, to teach responsibility, to have people understand that here is the way you do things the right way, and this is what we're trying to teach. And he said that he agreed with Tavis Smiley that the Penn State situation is one of the most egregious, if not the most egregious, set of circumstances he'd ever seen, far beyond even the SMU situation.
Yeah.
Smiley went on to ask him, well, in comparing the SMU situation, which warranted a death penalty, how does this compare? And he kind of tabled that answer. He said, I don't want to compare to everything's in, but we are demanding that Penn State come back to us and explain themselves to us, more or less one of these situations where you have to, I forget the terminology that the NCAA has. I remember when Michigan had to submit a report back when they had their troubles under Rich Rod. And he said that he wants this quickly. He wants it within weeks, not months. So I think we're going to see something pretty quickly. And I know when you and I were talking last week and then Mark called in, we all pretty much agreed that this was a law enforcement issue.
Yeah.
And then Rex Rhodes' column this morning indicated that he thought it should go that way. And I'm not in disagreement with Joe. I'm just telling him, if you read the tea leaves and listen carefully to what Emmert said, it looks like it's going a different direction.
It does. That's for certainly that's what I heard last night, like you as well. It certainly says, like, that they may do something, you know, more than just tearing down the statue. They may do a lot more to Penn State. A little bit surprised at that response, but, I whatever they do, you know, that's what the NCAA does. And you know, you hate to see what happens to the kids going to get a chance to transfer if they do something, or will they just stay there and get their scholarship? You know, because you're going to hurt the team today, that's for sure. If you spend them for a year or take them to the curb, the kids today are going to be responsible, and it's like they're being held responsible for what happened in the past.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. even in this situation, it's even worse, because my opinion is, this all came down to Joe Paterno's power and hubris. And then that brings me to two quick points, and I'll let you go. The first point is, I keep hearing that this could happen anywhere. You know, you hear people who talk about, be careful about being showing too much schadenfreude towards Penn State because this could happen anywhere. Earl, I don't think this could happen anywhere else. I don't think any coach in America has ever had that kind of power that Joe Paterno had. Woody Hayes got fired.
Yep.
Bobby Bowden got fired. Bo Schembechler had a lot of juice in Michigan, but I don't think he could go to the trustees and say, "Nah, you're not going to fire me. I'll tell you when I'm going to quit." And this is at a period in 2006 where Paterno had like 38, 40 players be charged and or convicted of felonies. He was on a losing streak of 2 or 3 years in a row where he had a losing record. And he just told them to go fly a kite. I'm not going anywhere.
Yep.
And then we used to know all the other leverage that he employed. And then the other thing, Earl, is I didn't see anything in that report about Sandusky's projected pretty much thought of ascension to head coach following Paterno or other jobs, including the Michigan State job that he was rumored to be in line for. All of a sudden, all that talk stopped. I didn't see anything in the report that said we had to get this guy to the door. He wasn't going to be our coach, but we had to keep it a secret. Why? I'll hang up and listen. Let me know what you think about that, and we'll go from there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We didn't hear a lot about that. Yes, I heard a lot. We've got Joe on the line now, so let's bring in Joe. Joe, you heard Dennis's comments, and what's your thoughts on those? And you wrote a good column this morning, as I read today. So I know this Penn State is going to be in the forefront for a long time, and I'm just a little bit surprised that it looks like the NCAA is going to step up and do something to them.
Yeah, it does, and I agree with a lot of what your caller said. And I'm kind of surprised, and I'm really disappointed that Mark Emmert is going this route. I mean, you know, if you read the column I wrote, mm-hmm. I'm very against the NCAA getting involved here. I think this is a legal issue. I think they've got enough issues, you know. I mean, they don't have subpoena power either, you know, and it's, which is what people are criticizing the free report for. But I just feel like, I mean, I guess you could. To me, I don't see why Penn State has to suffer anymore. Why the community has to suffer? Why the players in that program have to suffer? And I understand you could let them transfer or whatever, but to me, that's just a totally separate issue. The issue is these men and what they did and what they didn't do. And that's why they should be in prison. And I think that they will, along with Sandusky. You know, to me, the real, it's just shocking to me what came out in that report, because I really didn't want to believe that Joe Paterno would actually lie, for one thing, about hearing about the 98 incident. And then really, I mean, if you go through that thing, I mean, it's pretty clear that he is the guy who kind of convinced the others to, you know, to conceal this. And it's just, it's the most tragic sports related story I can recall.
Yes. Oh, I'd agree with you 100% on that.
But no, Earl, I mean, I don't know how you feel, Earl. I just don't think that any NCAA action is needed. And I think it's just get out of the way and let the courts deal with it and let's move forward. And, And I agree, you know, your caller mentioned, you know, that, you know, this could happen anywhere. I mean, I would hope it sure couldn't happen many places. I mean, right. This is an incredible combination of factors here. The, as he said, extreme power, absolute power Joe Paterno had, and then, of course, you know, I mean, the presence of a pedophile on his staff. I mean, this is, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime situation. But you know, I still think it's a good lesson for all athletic departments, as I wrote, you know, that, you got to, there are other issues that can come up, not as severe as this, but, you know, I think this is something that everyone can take some lessons from.
Oh, that's for sure. It would be hard. Like you, I don't think, and like the caller said, I think it would be very hard to look at and see this coming up at another university. No coach has that kind of power. I don't think in any school. I mean, a lot of coaches have a lot of power, but none of them be. And a lot of Joe Paterno's power came because he was there so long, and you know, he got ingrained in the system, and he gave so much money to the university back. So he had a ton of power just because he was there that long. And I know that's one thing I've often said a long time ago, we'll never see a coach stay as long in one place as Joe Paterno has. I don't think we'll see that in our lifetime at all, or in the next lifetime or two.
Yeah, well, no, or just anyone even coaching to that age. I mean, mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, it's so different now. I mean, he, for most of his tenure, the attention, the pressure, all those things were way different than what they are today. I mean, I think it's a much shorter shelf life for these coaches. But you know, you're right, no one, you know, you definitely could argue that Joe Turner was the most powerful coach, certainly, but I think there are other places where there's a dangerous level of power for the successful coaches, particularly football coaches.
Yes.
At institutions, I mean, institutions that are, you know, are creating statues of coaches who are still on staff. I mean, you know, I look around, I think it's certainly, you know, you've got some potentially dangerous situations where I think universities do have to get a little more handle on athletics, but it's tough because this is the front porch of your university. This is, and this is where so much of your, you get so much money out of athletics now. It's just, it's tough, I think, sometimes to contain that power.
Yes, and the other thing that that we've seen, the only thing I hate that so many universities do, just about all of them do, at one time or another, they try to cover it up. It's no sense just trying to cover up something when it's bad. You might as well get it out there because eventually, as we know, it's going to come out. But it seems like in every situation, the first thing they try to do is to cover it up.
That's amazing. It is. It's just that's got to be the lesson. It's just, you can't do that. In this day and age, it's going to come back on you. I mean, these guys, if you read these emails, you know, all of their emails, they would call Sandusky like Jay, or they would the person. You know, they would never refer to him by name, because then, you know, when someone used the Freedom of Information Act and did like a search with Sandusky, none of those would come up. You know, very clever. But if you're going to have some of these conversations by email at all, then it's going to come back. I mean, it's incredible. But yeah, I mean, it's really despicable. It still angers me to really think about the fact that for a decade these kids could have been safe,
right.
And the you know, the image, you know, of a football program came before that. It really is just disgusting.
It is. And now, the caller, Jerry Sandusky, was up for some jobs. I know one job he mentioned is he wasn't up for the Michigan State job. That was the former offensive coordinator there, wasn't he?
Fran Ganner.
He was.
Maybe Sandusky may have been thrown out there early in what turned out to be the Saban hire. Maybe they were both thrown out there. I don't know. But, yeah, it was Ganner who actually came close and actually came up here and interviewed. So I think that may have been what he was thinking of, right?
Yeah, Gannert, he was close. I remember when he came up here, and he decided to stay at Penn State. It's probably good for Michigan State. I mean, he decided to stay there, but that was one of those things. Gannert was one of those guys. He was like a lot of Penn State assistants, thought he was going to get the head job, or he thought he was in line to get the head job. Then I guess when he realized he didn't wasn't going to get it, he moved into the administration.
Right, exactly, yeah, so... Yeah, but it's a mess, you know. But anyway, the whole thing is a mess. And you're right; it's just going to keep going and going. The civil suits,
yes.
The NCAA is just, if they really get involved in this, which I think is a huge mistake. I really do. But if they do, and in the way Mark Emmert's talking, they're going to, you know, it's just going to be that much more of just constantly in the headlines every day.
Yes, because we know with there's going to be a ton of lawsuits, and we know they're going to take a long time to settle probably. But, you know, that's what his free report is done. You know, he's just really opened the door. That free report has opened the door for all the lawsuits and a lot of the question marks and things. So, you know, that lawsuit, it's going to be good for the kids who will probably sue and try to get something to move on with their lives, which is probably good. But boy, that's going to take up a lot of time. That's going to cost Penn State a ton of money.
Right. I mean, Penn State is going to be absolutely gutted here. I mean, it's going to be, you know, some estimates, you know, in the six-digit millions, six-figure millions. I mean, so, you know, $100 million plus. So it's so much damage already done, and that's why I just don't see why it's necessary to come in and do something to the football program. I just don't see it, but obviously a lot of other people do. People want blood right now.
Yes, they do, and that's the same. People always, you know, when something like this happens, everybody's screaming and crying. They want blood. They want this. They want that. And I guess I'm just going to wait and see how it all unfolds. That's the only thing I feel like I can do. But, you know, a lot of these people, they want blood. I mean, they really do. You know, they don't want to see it. They don't want to let it play out. They want to, you know, hopefully make a decision or hopefully have some kind of impact on the decision.
Yep. Yeah, and that's the thing too. And I wrote that today. I see fans of other schools, and it's like, it's almost like, yeah, you know, now we can get some of their recruits, and it's just, the point, but that's, it just bothers me that it becomes a football thing. I mean, it happened in a football program, but again, this is heavy duty criminal stuff, you know, and I just, it's not something that I think the NCAA should be messing with, but. It looks like they're going to.
Yes, it does. That's for sure. Hey, Joe, let's just turn our attention to the Spartans. You know, as we know, practice will be starting soon. You'll be coming back from the Olympics, and practice will be starting, so you won't get much of a break. That's for sure. What do you see with the Spartans? You know, do you see any really key competitions or competitions for jobs? I mean, we know where the starting quarterback, we know they've got plenty of receivers. The offensive line is fairly set for the first time in a long time. So what do you see as some of the key competitions coming up this year?
Yeah, well, it is going to be weird coming in. We'll be coming in midway through camp after 3 weeks at the Olympics. So I wish the Olympics were earlier this year. But, yeah, so I'm going to be coming right up. I miss Chicago the first time in a long time. But you know, off the cuff, I'd say, I mean, the jobs that I think are interesting, well, obviously a receiver, it's a total crapshoot there, a lot of different guys. I think at left guard, you know, Blake Treadwell, I mean, Jack Allen really making a push at center and guard. So, you know, there's some different things that could happen maybe there between left guard and center. And then, you know, defensive tackle James Kittredge, the transfer from Vanderbilt, I think nudged ahead of Tyler Hoover late in the spring, but that's pretty much a break-even battle heading into camp. So those are the ones that come to mind. And obviously, the Trent Robinson's position. I think Curtis Drummond is a guy right now. But, you know, could a Demetrius Cox come in as a true freshman and make a run at that? I mean, you know, he's obviously a very impressive specimen. So, receiver is just going to be, I mean, so many different possible combinations. And if Aaron Burbridge gets it done as, you know, things appear to be on the right track for him, if he's qualified, and there's just another really talented guy you throw in there. A lot of talent, not a lot of experience, but you figure out of all that competition, you end up getting some guys who can perform.
Okay. Hey, Joe, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We'll be talking more. Have you a good time? I know you're going to work hard at the Olympics, so we'll look forward to you when you get back, my friend.
Okay, buddy. Sounds good. Thanks,
Earl. Hey, thank you. Yep, bye-bye. And that's Joe Rexroth from the Lansing State Journal talking sports with us. We want to invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870. Remember, you've been listening to radio station WKAR in East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up and talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. So make sure you come back and join us tomorrow. Spread the word around, though, to everyone you know. You can enjoy sports right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing.
from NPR News in
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.